On this episode of Tips from the Top Floor, we'll try to find out what style in photography really means and why and if you should develop one. And we'll look at how to shoot video and do photography at -7 degrees Fahrenheit while being on a ship in wind force 8 and 16-foot waves. This episode is brought to you by Discover the Top Floor. Join us on an unforgettable photo tour, for example, to the Arctic, to the Lofoten in Norway. We have just opened 2 spots on our Lofoten tour in September. We'll also go to photograph the wild northwest of Ireland and a very special desert-themed photo tour in Morocco. Come on a once-in-a-lifetime photo tour, join a group of like-minded people, and do the photography you've always dreamed to do. Find out more at discoverthetopfloor.com. This is Tips from the Top Floor, episode 816 for Thursday, March the 29th, 2018. Tips from the top floor, tips from the top, all right, from the top floor. Hey and welcome, it's Chris Marquardt bringing you Tips from the Top Floor, the longest running photography show on the planet. I'm back from an adventure, from a real adventure. From a new experience, and it was a ton of fun and a good learning experience as well from a photography point of view and especially from a videography point of view. Now, this was not a photo tour. I was on a passage from northern Norway, from Tromsø to Svalbard, Spitsbergen, over the Barents Sea. Not as a guest on the ship, it wasn't a cruise, but pretty much as a member of the crew. And you might remember last year in May, we chartered the Nordelicht. That's the ship I was on. And we had photographers with us and offered this as a photo tour. And it was a wonderful experience. And if you haven't followed that, the Nordelicht is a 2-mast schooner. It's over 100 years old. It was built in Germany. It now sails under Dutch flag. It's owned and operated by a wonderful Dutch couple, Marielle and Floris. And last year, being on the ship, I kind of fell in love with the ship. I mean, it's just such a characterful ship. And I kept contact with the two, and we did some collaborations, including me building their new website. I'm going to link that in the show notes. And through that contact, I got the opportunity to sail on the ship outside of a photo tour. Normally, they have guests on the ship, and there are just a few times in the year where when they don't, and when they do something like this crossing of an ocean, and they do Arctic expeditions, and the ship is made for the Arctic. It's ice strengthened. The hull is strengthened for ice, and during the winter months, it sails around northern Norway, around Tromsø in the fjords, and they do whale watching, they do Northern Lights tours in the winter. And then during spring and summer, the ship is around Svalbard, or Spitsbergen, as it's called in here in Germany. And that means, of course, that they have to transfer the ship twice a year. They have to get from Norway up to Svalbard, and then they have to go back at the end of the season. So when I got that opportunity, of course, I freed some time up, and then I did it. And it was a good experience. So the whole thing was planned to be a 12-day event, which is ample time to get there. And it allows for like weather-induced delays. And in the end, we kind of used the entire time. We had 2 days in Tromsø for packing and getting everything ready. It was so much to do in terms of like tightening down everything, fastening everything. Make sure nothing can move, no matter how high the waves on the sea, how much the ship rocks. And we took 3 days and nights then on the ship on sea, and managed to get the ship over or up north towards the North Pole. And then we took several days on the ship to unload, get it ready for the next guests. And I also found a few days after that to write on a new book that I'm writing on, which is exciting. Now, I'm not a sea person. I'm not a sailor. So I apologize if I'm getting some of the nautical lingo wrong. we also stowed away supplies that had to be carried up to Svalbard. So it was a transport mission as well. And yes, I know it's called bunkering. Again, I'm not a sailor. I know terms like starboard and aft and ahoy and dinghy and porthole. That's pretty much the extent of it. So when we were in Tromsø, it wasn't clear how early we could leave. The weather forecast didn't look too good in the beginning. Where expected wind speeds of over 9 Beaufort, which is over gale force winds. It turned out they were not quite as bad, but still quite heavy. Coming from the east, which is not the ideal direction if you want to sail northwards. And we ended up having 5-meter high waves. 5-meter waves, that's about 16 feet. But we delayed our time to sail for a while, but then we had to leave. The captain decided that we had to leave because the extended forecast showed even worse weather, with a polar cold front coming into Svalbard at about minus 22 Celsius, which is minus 7 Fahrenheit. And not only would the ship have been full of ice, which is not ideal, but the fjords around our destination would have been hard to even get into because they would be frozen at these temperatures. And while the Nordlicht has a strengthened hull, it can withstand some level of ice. It is not an icebreaker. So yeah, the captain made the decision to go, and we did. And then we first sailed through the fjords, which was quite calm, and then to the open sea. And the wind forces went up to about 8 Beaufort in the gusts. And yeah, again, 5-meter waves. And we spent 3 days and 3 nights on the open sea. We were 9 people on board, and we sailed around the clock in 4-hour watches, 6 4-hour watches, 3 people each. And everyone had to take 2 watches at opposite sides of the day. So my watch was from 4 to 8 twice a day, the sunrise shift and the sunset shift. And then the rest in between was sleep and sleep and recovery. By the way, those are the 4 to 8 shifts are the most beautiful shifts if you're a photographer. I'll get into that in a second. In case you're wondering what the tasks are on a watch for those 4 hours, the 3 of us, we had to keep the ship on course. One was like from the ship who knew how to navigate. We had to keep the ship on course, be at the steering wheel, which on this ship, as the sailing ship, doesn't have a wheelhouse, so you're out in the elements. I had to wrap up really warm. I didn't have a specific sailing clothes, but I have my trekking clothes, so that was good enough. Second task is to help de-ice the ship, because the polar air comes in from the north and the ice builds up, and if there's too much ice on the ship, it destabilizes the ship. It makes it hard to steer. So you could see me several times going out to the front with a squeegee kind of thing and get the slush off the deck. And I think the first mate used a hammer, like a big mallet, to break off bigger chunks of the ice from the hull. And then just some mundane stuff during the watch, like make coffee or tea for the others and go inside every now and then to warm yourself up. But back to the shift. So 4 to 8 in the morning, that's the sunrise shift, and the 4 to 8 in the evening is the sunset shift. So those are definitely the 2 shifts with the most potential for nice photography, because the sun is low, the beautiful colors in the sky, the clouds, the Arctic light is just amazing. And while we didn't have clear mornings and evenings all the time, we did a few times, and it was beautiful. It was just a sight that... Yeah, it's hard to describe, and I tried my best to photograph that, but this was not a photo tour, didn't have any paying clients with me, and while I had my cameras with me, my photo backpack, while I did do some still photography, my focus for this transfer was a different one. It was on video. I went into that with the plan of documenting this on video, kind of a, a vloggy kind of thing. And I did film a 7-part video series while in the ship. Short videos, like three minutes each. And I did some photography. I did some still photography, which I'm really happy with. But That was not the main focus. There's a link in the show notes. I've posted the photos online on social media, so you might have seen a few of them. But again, the first priority was to get the ship and ourselves to Svalbard in one piece. So the photography was pretty much the third priority after the video. So while I'm really happy with my photos, I didn't shoot quite as much as I liked. But having said that, I'm really happy with the video part. Now, okay, let's briefly talk about the equipment because I know you're interested in that. I did bring stuff for video filming, like an external microphone and a GorillaPod, like the vlogger kind of thing. And I was planning to use the 7D Mark II a lot for that. It turned out that with the gale force winds and the high waves, that wasn't really an option. So I had to resort to whatever was feasible in the moment, what wasn't in the way, what was, what would easily go in my pocket. And often I use the small Chinese GoPro clone. I have this Xiaomi He 2K camera, it's a full HD camera. I think it does a bit more than full HD, but it fits in a pocket. It's easy and inconspicuous. It's got this fisheye look, which I think you can turn off a bit so it does some math and straightens the lines. I shot some footage with the iPhone, my iPhone 8, which is always with me, and some with a 7D Mark II and even some with a 5D Mark IV. So it was a mix of cameras. And while I was initially like, that kind of, it should be more consistent in the look, it was impossible to do on that kind of an event. The temperature situation was interesting. One word, the temperatures were Arctic. Well, and while at sea, we had temperatures up to -9 Celsius, which is about 16 Fahrenheit, plus the wind chill. So we're talking wind chill -20 Celsius, -4 Fahrenheit, which is taxing in many ways. Well, first of all, taxing for the batteries. The little GoPro knockoff camera is a bit weak in the battery, which means I had to, in addition to that camera, I had to carry like a small USB power bank in my pocket to keep it charged. The Canon DSLR is not that much of a problem. Those original batteries are quite good. I don't use third-party batteries in those. But the temperature didn't only have a toll on the batteries. It also made it hard to operate cameras, because in order to not freeze too much, you have at least 4 to 5 layers on. You have stuff on that keep you warm. And in my case, it was some undergarments and then a down jacket and a fleece jacket, a down jacket and a hard shell on top. Then you have heavy gloves and a hat and a hood and a buff. So, you know, you're just looking through like a slit pretty much when you're out there, which makes operating the camera a bit of a challenge. And don't even try to suggest gloves that where you can flip the fingers open. I have those. I use those. But at -20 Celsius, -4 Fahrenheit, exposing your fingers to the elements even for just a minute is a painful experience. You don't want to do this. So holding a camera with exposed fingers is, yeah. You end up being a bit clumsy because you have to use gloves and you have to use warm gloves. I used to Arctic gloves that were like really making it difficult to operate the cameras. But again, battery wise, it wasn't really an issue out there, while the small GoPro clone was, yeah, a bit weak, but like I used the USB bank to charge it. The ship has mains power on board, so my cabin with my chargers, it was never more than like half a minute away. So if I needed to swap a battery or charge something, hey, that was easily doable. But in the end, that's one of my big takeaways here. Even with using 5 different cameras and some of the footage was shot by someone else on even a different smartphone or other camera. One of the guys had a Sony action camera. So some of that footage is from a Sony action camera. It didn't really matter because the footage tells a story, and that story is in the front seat. And I used some of that. I didn't have amazing sound, but that didn't really matter too much. I did some narration down in the cabin, which, by the way, I brought a light. I brought a Yongnuo, like light stick kind of thing, this light sword kind of thing. And that I used to just light myself. I bounced it off the wall to have some light in my face. And that was in my cabin where it was warm. And I hope I managed to put something together that's kind of coherent and fun to watch. And again, the one big thing I learned from this exercise, story is everything. It's okay to mix and match cameras, and for such a project, you can use technically subpar cameras as long as it ends up in a kind of a tight and entertaining story. And from that point of view, from the story point of view, this video documentation almost didn't need much work. I mean, it was a lot of work to import all the footage and to make choices and to put the music to it. But the story was there in our preparations, in our journey, in our arrival. So the story was kind of built in to something like this. And those videos are mostly chronological, from at least from episode 1 to 6. And so you can follow the story, and it takes you from episode to episode. And they're also from a style. Well, here we are talking about style. We'll talk about style a bit later in the show. But from a style point of view, they are also a bit different, where some are more in the today's vlogger / YouTuber style, where I talk and then interspersed little montages of things. Some of those are without any narration, just the video itself. If you want kind of an overview, the final episode 7, I cut together as a montage of the entire journey. It's a bit of a recap. So if you only want to watch one of those videos, I suggest you start at episode 7 of that. And then if you want the full story, you can go back to number 1 and watch those in order. But the video part was a very good exercise. I haven't done that in a long time as a project. So it was one of those projects, and I'm happy I did it. But even if I made it sound like it wasn't that interesting in terms of still photography, by the way, that's of course not really true, because the Arctic is always amazing in terms of still photography. And while it wasn't that easy to do all the time, because either my cameras were inside, which, by the way, now putting the camera just on the table is dangerous because it will be banged around at wind force 8, and so I had to like tie that one down as well, so it wasn't as easily accessible all the time. But you know, the light, the Arctic light, is just very, 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 very special. You have these long sunrises and sunsets. You have to, like, sometimes the sun, as it goes through the atmosphere, it loses some parts of the spectrum. And then in some cases, we had pink sunrises. The sun being beautifully pink, hitting the peaks of mountains, resulting in these blue shadows that looked like straight from a bubblegum machine. I mean, it's really hard to believe that those colors aren't photoshopped. Again, go to the website. The photos are at tfttf.com/NOO2018. tfttf.com/NOO2018. Those bubblegum sunrises, I mean, that's just unbelievable. One of the other guests who was on board was Martijn Smeets, a Dutch photographer. And in Tromsø, before the journey, he and I used some downtime in the afternoon to get some photography done in town, and that was fun too. I think I managed to get him hooked on the 24 tilt shift. He's also a Canon shooter, so we swapped lenses, and I think he enjoyed that a lot. And then he got me really interested in the 11 to 24 millimeter on the full frame, which is an extreme, extreme wide angle. I know there's more extreme ones, but 11 millimeters is quite wide. And I think one thing that makes this kind of photography interesting for me is it's always interesting and always exciting to shoot in extreme conditions, to see what kind of photos you can get in conditions where it's outside your comfort zone. And that kind of a setting forces me to learn my equipment even better, And that being able to use my equipment even better by being forced into it, that allows me to get shots that I wouldn't be able to get any other way. Also being in that kind of a setting and doing the photography is just, yeah, it's a good experience. It's a good learning experience. And I'm deeply grateful that I had the opportunity to do that. And I sure hope I'll get another opportunity like this in the future. Definitely want to go again. It was great, great stuff. Oh, and I'm also looking into more Arctic, like, tours / workshops in the future, more Arctic travels, maybe again as a photo tour. Keep an eye out. DiscoverTheTopFloor.com. Yeah, I'm trying to work on a few things there. Oh, and by the way, I forgot, I have also recorded an episode of Curiously Polar about the Barents Sea, which is the ocean that we crossed. So if you're interested in that, go to, the link in the show notes, episode 37 of Curiously Polar, where we talk about what the Barents Sea is and what it means to cross it. Let me take a quick moment and thank our sponsors, Masterclass.com. Imagine learning cooking from Gordon Ramsay or basketball from Steph Curry or photography from Annie Leibovitz. Now you can with Masterclass. Masterclass makes online classes taught by the best in the world. You get to choose from classes taught by over 30 masters across a wide range of fields, such as writing, cooking, film, acting, and of course, photography. All beautifully produced and carefully curated. Whether you are pursuing your passion, developing your career, or just looking to learn something new, Masterclass gives you access to the best at their craft so you can master yours. Now here's the kicker. Are you interested in more than one class? Check out the All Access Pass. With the new All Access Pass, you can unlock every class from over 30 masters, all for the price of two. Tips on the Top Floor listeners can get the All Access Pass at masterclass.com/topfloor. Learn from the best in the world at masterclass.com/topfloor. masterclass.com/topfloor. This episode is also brought to you by WeTransfer. WeTransfer is all about making the creative process easier for everyone. They built their site to be the simplest way to share big files around the world for free. I have, for example, used their service often to transfer big image files to the editor when working on the different books. There's no sign-in, no offer codes, no password to forget. Just upload, send, and get back to making what you make. 40 million people use WeTransfer to send and receive files every month, and since day one, they've devoted 30% of their ad space to showcasing creative people from around the world, from musicians to illustrators to photographers to podcasters like us. So in that spirit, we're skipping the rest of this 60-second ad and getting right back into the podcast.
Hi, Chris. This is Scott from Portland, Oregon. I'm pretty new to photography and really new to the podcast, but I love the podcast. I really like the combination of technical discussion and philosophy about photography. And my question, I guess, is in the latter category. I have a question about style. So I go to websites and I see people talking about either copying a photographer's style or developing your own style, and I don't really know what they're talking about. For a painter, you know, Van Gogh has a style, and I get that. But when I go to some of these websites and I look at the photos, you know, I see some great photos. I like the photos, but I have trouble from looking at those photos discerning, well, what, you know, the style part. What's this photographer's style? Do they underexpose? Do they vignette? I don't really know. So I'd really like an explanation of what style is. Then related to this.
All right. Let's look at the first part of the question first. What is style? Well, that's a very, very good question. First, hi, Scott, and hi to Portland, Oregon. I've been there. Beautiful, beautiful city you live in. So, I've always had my problem with the term style in photography, and I think that search for your own style as a photographer is a bit overrated, to be honest. If you're consistent, if you keep at it, sooner or later, some form of a style might emerge on its own. But let's look at the term first, style. Yeah, in photography, it would probably mean some stylization, some stylized photos, photos that have something in common, photos that are reduced in some way or composed in some way or that are, let's say, color treated in some way. And you will probably see a style in a photographer if you look at like their body of work over time. And if you see all those pictures together, if you look at my photos, for example, I tend to gravitate towards very tidy compositions. I emphasize straight lines. I like when lines are straight, especially the verticals and when architecture is involved. I reduce what's in the photo. I compose in a way to take out what's not necessary. I often also work with a reduced color set. And if you can clearly see that in my photos from the Arctic, there's a link in the show notes if you want to go there right now. It's tfttf.com/NOO2018 for Nordlicht, NOO2018. Some people might call that a style. I'm not really sure if it is, but it's a certain look or a certain feel that some of my photos have. It's certainly reduction to fewer details. It often has a geometric quality. And again, the reduced color set, 2, maybe 3 colors. Good example, the ship's hull with the red and the yellow and the blue. I use a tilt shift lens to keep the lines straight. The reason I like that is because it gives the photos much more of a like an intentional quality. It shows that I made the deliberate choice in doing when I took this photo. But I never really worked towards that being my style. It just emerged from me learning more about photography over time and applying things to my photography that I like. You know, things that make me feel good about my photos, that I can look at the photos and go, yeah, I like that. Now, there are photographers who are much more stylized than what I do. I mean, example, David LaChapelle, for example. He works in a highly stylized fashion. I'll put a link in the show notes, an image search, or go to Google and do an image search yourself. David LaChapelle, one word, LaChapelle. Super stylized stuff. That's his style. So there is clearly a style. But with most photographers, I don't think it's a thing that you can deliberately work towards. Now, you can be a photographer who can shoot in different styles, of course. I mean, it's just that some photographers are known better for one style, but most photographers can do more than one thing. It's a bit like in music, let's say. I'm a bass player. I used to play a lot of jazz and fusion, which is stylistically, there are certain patterns of playing in jazz that are more prevalent in that style than in others. You can play like a walking bass line, which would be completely out of place in pop music, for example. But I also love to play other music sometimes, like Manouche, for example, which is completely different in style and like very different rhythmic and harmonic patterns. But it's still fun for me to play it. So the same is definitely true for photography. I'm not looking at doing one style and that's the only thing. I'm looking at being diverse and being able to do multiple things, even though there might be certain things that I'm more known for than others. Well, let's hear the second part of your question.
Then related to this, the advice to develop your own style. Why would I want to develop my own style? I guess that sounds silly, but it seems to me I should be flexible. I might have one style for landscape, a different style for portraits, even in landscape, you know. Why would I wouldn't want to do the same thing all the time. I know like Van Gogh has a style that worked for him, but for my pictures, wouldn't I want to be more flexible as far as you know, my approach to choose each one differently and rather than categorize in a particular way. Anyway, I hope you can shed some light on that. And again, I love the podcast. Thanks.
Well, thanks again. Yeah, exactly that. The different kind of genres. If you like to shoot landscapes and portraits, there's no point in kind of trying to make those both the same style. Van Gogh, good example. He had his style, right? Yeah, but only during certain phases of his career, of his painting. Van Gogh has had that style that he's known for, right? If you Google Van Gogh and look at the images, yeah, you will see a certain type of image. But he had a development over time. And if you look at early Van Gogh, you'll find that those pictures are nothing like his later work. Every artist has a development over time, and every artist tries out different things. Let's look at Ansel Adams, for example. I mean, what he's known for are his national park landscapes. Gorgeous photos, 4x5 camera, view cameras, wonderful stuff. But did you know that he also did street photography? And he used different tools there, different subject matter, different style. So in short, just don't worry about the style. If you don't have to develop a style, but maybe over time a style will emerge from how and what you shoot. All right, that was it for this episode of Tips from the Top Floor. Thanks everyone for your support, and thanks to Masterclass and WeTransfer for supporting this show. You guys are awesome. If you want me to go, you better let me know. I remember that I told you. Music for the show by Jeff Smith, silent partner Hans Peter Kagerud Publishing, and Slack Challenges by Release Pixie Matt Rafsitar Armstead. Slack Invitations, as usual, by Chief Invitation Officer CIO Rusty Russ. My name is Chris Marquardt. Follow me on social media, Chris, M-A-R-Q-U-A-R-D-T. And of course, go out and take amazing photos. Be nice to each other. And happy shooting.